o'clock to tell the selection committee meeting to order on Zirinsky Basin number two. We have the notification open meeting act that is posted on the back wall and outside with that quorum call.
Greg Conley?
Here.
John Conley?
Here.
Poodle?
Here.
Pollard?
Here.
Chairperson?
Here. Item four, adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
John Conley?
Yes.
Poodle?
Yes.
Pollard?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes. Item six, review and recommendation of initial screening and proposed or consultant selection interviews. Amanda. Good evening.
Okay, well, my part will be short here. On January 18th, we requested proposals. We distributed our requests to the engineering community and also advertised in the Omaha World Herald. And proposals were due on February 4th at noon. We received four proposals, and those were from Olson Associates, JEO Consulting, HDR Engineering, and Snyder & Associates. And so those four proposals have been sent to the ad hoc subcommittee, and so if you want to discuss the proposals or
Anybody have any questions for Amanda or want any discussion? Or do we want to make a motion? Address or comment?
I have a question for staff. In my opinion, there's two that I definitely want to interview, and I struggle to get a third one. Is there any requirement that we have to interview three?
I don't believe there's any requirement that you have to interview three. I think there's been times where four or two or, you know, however many have been interviewed. Generally, it's three.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments from the directors? Director Cowley, or?
In terms of looking at these, do you think there are three in here that are capable of doing this?
I do. I do. My review of the proposals, I would recommend HDR, JEO, and Olson Associates, and Snyder & Associates. I think their proposal was just a little more general and didn't kind of get to the understanding of the project. And so for that reason, and also I don't believe their local presence is very strong, more so in Iowa. So for that reason, I would have chosen the other three.
Comments? I guess comments for me would be that I share Director Conley's. I saw two outstanding proposals and one that was so-so and one I didn't think was worth a damn. No offense. I don't know what two you had in mind, John, but in my estimation, I think it'd be a waste of time for that third one or fourth one to come in if we really aren't going to consider them. And why don't we put them on the table here and see what kind of response we get as far as a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Go ahead, sir.
I move we interview Olson and HDR.
Is there a second?
One second.
Do you have any comments from the general public? Staff? Directors? This would be limiting the motion would be to just to interview the two, HDR or Olson, whatever order, and the other two would be excluded.
Okay, I would just add the interviews are scheduled March 3rd, 6 o'clock, and we could do, you know, alphabetical orders if you choose to do that.
Okay. Is that agreeable? With that, roll call.
Okay. Boodle?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. So that'll be March 3rd, and what time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Okay. Any other business? Hearing none, motion to adjourn?
You don't need a motion.
We are adjourned.
Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting, February 9th, 2016. I got 6:35. Notification of Open Meetings Act, which is posted on the, vault, on the back wall, to my right. Forum call.
John Conley?
Here.
Fowler?
Here.
Leahy?
Here.
Japp?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Japp?
Yes.
Leahy?
Yes.
John Conley?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication meeting notice. I have proof of publication here of the meeting tonight. Anyone care to read it? Item number six has to do with legislative bills. We have recognition of 2016 legislative bills. John Winkler.
Did we adopt the agenda?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The in your packet is the list of the bills that will be introduced or have been introduced this legislative session, as well as carryover bills from the last session. This is the second session, so any bills that are not acted upon by the end of the session will die either in committee or unacted on. The NARD met at a legislative conference at the end of January. The managers met, discussed the bills, and took a position. Then the NARD executive committee met, and then they took a position. And then they went before all districts to get voted on. Director Teaser is the Papio's representative on that committee and on that legislative voting. I included the all the positions that were taken, and the recommendation is that we ratify what was presented and what was acted upon at the NARD conference. If anyone has a particular bill they would like to pull out for the district to take a different position that was recommended by the association, we can do that now. But again, I just included everything together because there didn't appear anything that would really stand out that, at least in my opinion, that we would want to take an opposing view on from what the 23 other NRDs took. Rich, did you have another comment?
The only comment I had was actually was the executive committee and the legislative committee met right in a joint session, and we came up with the recommendation.
And I don't think there was any different recommendations from the managers to the committee that you sit on. So a lot of these bills have been heard. Mr. Gay and Steve will give an update, or Ron will give an update Thursday on where many of these things stand. But most of these have already been through committee.
I want to ask a question. And that has to do with Bill LB 130, the Water Sustainability Fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's been somewhat controversial in the paper recently regarding how much money the district is asking for these. And the chair of the Appropriation Committee had asked that we withdraw a bill. Which bill is that?
No, he asked us to withdraw an application, and we'll discuss that in great length on Thursday.
On Thursday, okay.
Because we've been very much involved in that discussion, so I will fill you in on all the details. But
okay.
The LB 130, I believe, is the it's a bill to set a cap to that fund of what they can amount they can fund.
Yeah. Okay.
But it has nothing to do with what we requested. So.
Okay.
But yeah, I will brief the board on Thursday, and I believe we're requesting some action as well from the board. So, does anybody else have any questions on
Director Jones.
It's not on the list, but it doesn't really pertain to the NRD, but it retains to taxing. Could I have a report? Senator Lydia Brosh has a bill, and I think it's 717.
Okay.
But I really don't know what it's about, and I didn't see it in here either. But at the county board meeting is the first time I ever heard anything about it.
Okay. But I can ask Tim and Ron to give a report on that.
Yeah. But I know she introduced it. I'm not sure
okay.
the number.
Seven, okay.
But it has to do with ag tax. Okay. Taxing.
Okay, I'll ask Tim and Ron to do that.
Okay.
Would like to
make a motion? We have a motion.
I don't know if anybody made one yet.
I move we ratify the NARD recommendations.
Second. A motion is second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Directors?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. LB 716 provide unlimited provisions regarding pedestrians and bicyclists. Senator Pawlowski is here to monitor. I did get a call from Julie Harris, and she was supposed to be here tonight to clarify that. It does say monitor. Eric, would you be willing to chip in for Julie and explain that a little bit? Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. Julie and I talked over the phone, and it's an important bill for the cycling community. And Eric, if you could certainly shed some light on that.
Yep, I got a message from Julie earlier today that she was not going to be able to make it, so she apologizes for not being here in person.
Be here Thursday.
She could be. I'm not sure. I can check back with her and see if she'll be available. She is the executive director of the Nebraska Bicycling Alliance, so she supports active transportation and bicycle users. And they are supportive of this bill. It has two main portions. One is at locations where trails intersect with roads, and it provides additional protection and clarification on the right-of-way for if there is a traffic control device. Then that indicates that a person using the trail, meaning on a bicycle or walking, would have the right-of-way compared to the street. Currently, there it's for some reason ambiguous, and that someone could make a right turn through an intersection and run into someone who is using the trail legally, and then the driver of the automobile would not be held accountable because there is no definition of the difference between the right-of-way in that location. Secondly, is that in some locations, where trails run parallel to streets, you are required to use the trail, essentially. The terminology there is a little ambiguous. It says something like, I think it says sidewalk, or the term is very strange, but in the Burt Street section of the Turner Boulevard trail extension, bicycles would be required to leave the street and use the side path or trail section along the south side of Burt Street. That would be directly contradictory to Bike Route 1 in the Omaha Bicycle Plan. So it would be asking transportation cyclists to give up their right to use the street for transportation cycling and require them to use something more similar to a sidewalk. Again, it's mostly about ambiguity, that it's not clear whether or not a sidewalk that's 4 feet wide is sufficient to require a bicycle to be off of the street. And so this is providing some clarification on that as well.
Thank you. And I'm not on the committee, but unless a committee member decides, I'm going to probably suggest that we support that bill come Thursday. And thank you, Eric.
Yep.
I have some questions.
Okay.
You talked about going parallel with the road.
Mm-hmm.
What about on county roads?
In general, there's not very good clarification of where the responsibility would be. So Western Douglas County Trail on Maple Street, for example, would be another example. It's a rural highway, and I think it would require that the bicycle use the side path or the future trail that could be out there rather than be on the highway. They're looking for clarification, essentially, right, because the terminology isn't really defined. So a 4-foot sidewalk, an 8-foot side path, a full 10-foot trail like Happy Hollow Boulevard, you're not sure which of those does require the cyclist to leave the road.
And if the bill passes as is and the person is on the street and not using the bike trail, what are the penalties?
Currently, they can receive a ticket, although neither Julie nor I have ever heard of anyone actually receiving that ticket. But it's to help clarify the difference between when you can use the street and when you could not. For example, in some places, if the street were snowplowed and the trail were not, you would still be required to use the trail because it was physically there. Mm-hmm. And so if you were riding and you rode in the street, which had been cleared, and the trail was inaccessible, you would be able to receive a ticket for not using the parallel side path.
Hmm. Okay.
Rick, we had a discussion at the NARD, and I used specifically the West Maple Trail. And we have 2 10-foot wide trails paralleling Maple Street. And what you're saying is the senator is suggesting that the bike riders could ride in the right-of-way, the car right-of-way, rather than use the trail. And the whole purpose of this trail, in my opinion, is to get the kids and the adults off the right-of-way for the gravel trucks, and which were creating quite a hazard. And I just couldn't imagine why we'd want to support that bill. And so we end up just to monitor at this point.
So it probably applies more in urban sections than in rural sections. But again, the definition of where it applies is really why there's a problem. I met with Department of Roads today about the design of that trail specifically to kind of avoid some of those confusing locations. And so that's still in process. But it was agreed that Department of Roads does not prefer for people to be that close onto West Maple. And so that trail project is still in process because of that specific concern of keeping people on highway sections, rural highway sections.
Thank you.
Eric, I've got a question. It kind of bothers me that a bicyclist could be overtaking me and I'm making a right turn, go right into me, and he would have the right of way. And I've already started my turn. I think this is setting us up to get tickets when we're not disobeying the law. If they're overtaking us, they got to be on their own.
It specifically says that it's only where a traffic control device or traffic control sign allows the right-of-way to the trail user. And so there aren't that many locations. Again, there aren't that many locations where this applies, but the right turn example is one that in the committee hearing, a woman testified that she was legally using the trail and had the right-of-way according to the either sign or traffic signal, and a car turned into her and hit her. So it does not apply in all situations, only when it would give the right-of-way to the trail user and not in all situations. So if it's not clear, then this would not become a protected right-of-way for the cyclist preferential to the car.
If there's a traffic light there and somebody slows to make a right turn and the bicycle overtakes them, they would have the right-of-way. You wouldn't see them coming.
I would need to check with either Julie or which senator just the bill?
Well,
yeah, thank you.
I'd like to have a clarification on that Thursday night.
Sure, and like I said, I'm not sure if she can be here, but I'll talk to her again.
I think that, and part of the reason the monitor was there's a lot of ambiguity in this particular bill, and it was more viewed as a transportation issue with things like right of way and what the Department of Roads will allow. And I know that obviously our district has more trails probably than most. So, I mean, we'd have more interest. But as far as the overall association, they're like, this isn't something that really they're that interested in. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't support it or whatever, but that there was a lot of problems in the bill as far as trying to clarify. So I think the monitor, that's why they kind of hung that on there at this point in time. But, I mean, we can obviously do something different, so.
Just one final comment, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, there may be some ambiguity that this may or may not clarify. Hopefully it'll get in the minds of all those who use our trails and drive, jointly with those who use cycling as mode of transportation, that it's becoming more and more important. Omaha wants to be a trail city, just like Minneapolis and Portland. They're way ahead of the game. This is a way that's recognize that mode of transportation installed within the decades of driving a car is important, and I think it's sooner than better sooner than later that we do something about it. So.
This is a streamlined version of a previous bill that had some additional components in it. So they were attempting to get down to just the clarification of points where right-of-way for different vehicles or users would be clarified. That's the main function that they're working toward with this bill.
Any other directors? Any other questions? Roll call. Chap?
Abstain.
Leahy?
Abstain.
Chair votes aye. Motion
carries.
John Conlon?
Yes.
Ballard?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Yes. See you, Fred.
Okay, we're adjourned.
Okay, well, as soon as some people rearrange themselves, we'll get started with the Program Projects and Operations Subcommittee. Tim Fowler will be voting tonight in the absence of Patrick Bonnet.
The DORB use in other research or other projects. The continuous nitrate at Waterloo, as well as the next item we'll get to after this, basically, when we developed our watershed management plan, the modeling that was done, which was done for total suspended sediment to get at E. coli, mass balance for atrazine, total nitrogen and total phosphorus, one of the kind of sub-recommendations that came out of that plan was a need for continued assembling of data of those constituents, primarily also nitrogen, and that there were a way that these sensors or these real-time sites at Waterloo and then potentially the next one, which we'll discuss at Lashara, would be able to bracket the three large contributing watersheds to get at where those contributions are coming from. So that is essentially the recommendation for the site at Waterloo. That would add an additional just $5,151 to the annual agreement. For the operation of those three sites between Papiola, Platte South, and USGS. The second item, or second agreement, then is a new site, and that's on the next slide, and that is the Lashara site. This, as I mentioned, was also one of those gaps or bullseyes, I guess, for trying to get a better handle on the contributions from the contributing watersheds, as well as through discussions with municipalities that I have had or that I've had in concert with also USGS, MUD, and Lincoln Water System being the two primary stakeholders and users of the data, particularly of interest to them is the nitrate data. They also utilize the other information. And so we had gone to them and approached them about partnering in this. MUD had come forward and indicated that they would support the new site at Lashara up to $4,000 annually. So then that would result in that breakdown of option number one there, which up until this afternoon was what I believed what I would be presenting to you. I'd had conversations with Lincoln Water System. They hadn't progressed, I guess, as quickly as MED. I had another conversation this afternoon with Steve Owen and from Lincoln Water System, who indicated that they would recommend to their management to assist with funding that site as well at the up to the level of MUD. Lower Platte North did also have interest in this site. They are also in their third year of their current agreement for the Shell Creek site. They did take action on this yesterday at their board meeting and indicated or said that they would partner with the other partners at a cost up to or not to exceed the $8,083 that's there. With Lincoln Water System, that obviously knocks that down. So what we're looking at going forward, for all intents and purposes and my belief right now, is that option number two for the Lashara site. The next slide then is just a summary of the costs to the total cost through the 3 years of total first column there, USGS costs or contribution over that time The total for all the partners, and then Papio's portion is taken out of that partner total there for over the three-year term. So what you would be looking at for this first budget cycle, which would be in FY17, as we've traditionally done, we consider renewing these before they deploy the equipment again in March or April, and then it is budgeted for in the next fiscal year when our payments are first requested. So it would be the $44,735 if you were to fund the renewal of the existing agreement plus the Waterloo nitrate sensor plus the new Lashara site.
So you can see here in this, one of the important points is that with USGS, they have different funding streams. And in this case, this is a partnership. And so they are funding a portion of this testing. That's the USGS column, and then the partners, meaning the members of the alliance, essentially, plus the water supply, are the last column. So there is a cost share between USGS and these partners. And then you can see ours is broken out there. And then the bottom line, the lower right corner, is essentially the important part. That's what we would expect to see in the Lower Platte River Corridor Alliance budget when it's presented to us in June of each of the next 3 years. Would be that lower right number. That would be the annual contribution from our district for the entire network. And if you can go back to the memo, the second page is the map. I think we skipped over that pretty so this shows the different sites that we're talking about. You can see that Shell Creek is up and away. It's included in the discussion about the water quality monitoring network, but it's paid by Lower Platte North. The three existing sites are shown, and then Lashara, you can see, is the upper left Platte River at Lashara. That would be the new site. To provide additional information about the water quality as it comes down to the lower portion of the Platte, so we know where the different contaminants might be entering from what different parts of the watershed. The bottom line here, there are a couple different components, and so the recommendation is somewhat lengthy. There was a previous three-year agreement. The recommendation is to agree that we will participate in a new three-year agreement which includes the three previously existing sites. The nitrate monitoring will be added at the existing Waterloo site, and that a new site at Lashara will be added and will also include nitrate monitoring. And so the recommendation is that all of that together is what Lower Platte South would agree with USGS as the new water quality monitoring network agreement.
Lower Platte North?
Lower Platte North is participating through the Shell location, as well as
Lashara,
evenly with the other two districts, on dividing out that portion of the partner's cost. And that's on the last and second, page 5 of 6 on the...
Megan, did they vote on that last night?
Yesterday afternoon.
They approved it?
Yes, they did.
So, there. The bottom line here, the top line is shown just as reference of what we believed before earlier today. But Lower Platte North is also participating evenly with the other two NRDs in the cost specifically for the additional site. MUD and Lincoln Water Systems are essentially contingent on the Lashara site, including the nitrate monitoring immediately. So that cost is included in the new site right away, rather than installing the site and then adding that additional feature later, as we're doing with Waterloo.
Chair, I'd entertain a motion on the staff recommendation.
I'll move to oppose it.
I'll move to staff recommendation.
I heard Director Teaser first. Is there a second to Director Teaser's motion of opposition? Hearing none. Director Leahy?
I'll move to staff recommendation.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
All right. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none. Directors?
I'd like to say comment. I could.
Here. Go ahead.
Well, I live 2 miles or a mile and a half downstream from the Lashara site. And this nitrate monitoring only works March through October. It doesn't work during our prime time that we have a real crisis, which is ice out, February, early March. when the recreationists on the river really have no access to this information. Now, you say you can go on the USGS and look it up, but there's nobody's putting this information out on a daily basis saying, hey, the river's got too much too heavy load of nitrates in it. It's got too much atrazine in it. You should refrain from using water. Until I see that, I'm really adamantly opposed to spending the money for this, because every 15 minutes doesn't do a damn thing to 99.999% of the people. And you're asking us to fund something. If it was really that important, MUD would be doing it on their own or Lincoln Wellfield. And, I mean, if they were really that keen on it, because it is upstream of their major wellfields. And, you know, this is one of those things where I just see we have this report, we get this, and we get it, and we stick it in a bookshelf. And I'm getting damn tired of it, quite frankly, because it really doesn't benefit the users of the river on a day-by-day, hour-by-hour basis. You guys, nobody puts a warning out. Hell, I've been on that river when it was so black I could walk across the poop.
Yeah, and I can't, I mean, to this point, yeah, you're correct. You need to go to the USGS site, or if we all know of something or I can put something out, then that's great. But one of the...
But it's not happening.
One of the things that we are working towards through this recreation work that we are doing and that has been scoped out as far as the recreation plan, what it may take to do that, is to provide that essentially as an app or a web application, what have you, that's more easily accessible. You can be standing there thinking, I'm planning my trip. This is the weather. This is where I am. Here's the water quality. We have this data already. We've collected this information, and it can be included. It's web-based. It's provided real-time, and so there's a mechanism that we can get to there, which is every intent and purpose that we have, because we want people to have this information.
You know, it's interesting you say that, but I have nothing against you, Megan, here. It does bother me. We have a situation where we can't even keep the people off the river tubing when the river becomes unsafe. And now we're expecting the people to look at nitrate levels or atrazine levels, and they won't even look at water levels, which directly affects their safety when they're floating down the river.
And yeah, and I understand that. And I guess we can't, I mean, there's always, I guess, kind of the lowest common denominator with decisions and how people take in information and all of that. And all I can tell you is that we're working through this effort to making a huge education push as we're doing anything, having meetings, working with outfitters, what have you, now going forward on getting this information out. That's all I mean, that's what I can offer to you.
And you're going to tell me that the outfitter, if the nitrate level is 2 parts per million higher than normal, that they are going to not put their people on the river if there are 1,000 people every day and bring in $20 a tube? I mean, come on. I mean.
The graph that you've seen has been mentioned at other Lower Platte River Corridor Alliance meetings. As far as predictive ability to know when there will be contaminants, not only in real time, but before, based on rainfall. And so this one was atrazine, is that right?
Yeah.
And so the first step is to have the information about what contaminants are in the water so that we can then potentially develop systems to make alerts available to people. So if we don't have the baseline information, then we can't ever make that available. Without monitoring, there can't be any of this kind of even preliminary data that would potentially lead to alerts or apps or more available mechanisms for people to get that information. There's not currently any enforcement mechanism that the districts have to keep people from the water. That isn't something that we can really do. That's not within our responsibility.
Yes, we can. We can go through the legislature and ask for legislation to require, you know, compliance when the river becomes unsafe for high water events, for chemicals, or, you know, but until I see this, you know, I get, it's the cart before the horse, constantly.
Well, I think we'd have a difficult time asking for legislation when the river becomes unsafe without having the data about when that is. So we don't currently know all of the times when there are unsafe levels of different contaminants. So we don't know when the nitrate levels will be unsafe.
Yeah, and I find that interesting because anytime that river runs dirty, I can go out and take a water sample, run it to my local water test guy, and within 12 hours get a reading back, and they'll blow me away telling me how unsafe it is, and it's really sometimes very, very unsafe. And, but nothing gets done. You know, I just get tired. I'm looking at this from the perspective of the recreationists, the people that are on the river, the boaters, the tubers, the kayakers. You know, I hear a lot of talk, but I never see a damn thing get done, and that's what really bothers me. You know, maybe we ought to take baby steps. Let's look at the safety, the river levels first, get some regulations. If the river's too high, that the recreationists won't be on the river, and then we can look at these other things. But I'm just sick and tired of getting nickel and dime to death. And I'll repeat, if it was that important, MUD would be doing it right now. John, would you concur with that?
Well, partially, yes. They would be doing what they felt they needed. It's nice to have. It's always good to have some information. But they can't react very quickly. If they get a contaminant in the river, they can basically shut down or shift load to other plants for something to pass by. But day in, day out, they're not going to address the things that you're seeing in the river here, I'm afraid. Are you done, Rich?
Well, I was just going to make a comment. We could, with all the money we saved on the sandbar,
I've got a question for you. What do you track in the way of users of the data that we're getting now? Do you know who's checking on data, who's taking data?
We look, it's linked from our website into their website. I can watch how many people go in and out, where they came from, that sort of thing. We also ask people we meet with, or we have public outreach events, put that out there, that sort of thing. We communicate with MUD, Lincoln Water System, as far as, you know, they're checking existing sites in addition to you know, other information that's out there. In that sense, yes, we track it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Director Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's no dollar amount in this staff recommendation, so I'm looking at it as it's not going to cost us anything, which is a problem to find. you threw a bunch of numbers up there, but it doesn't matter. That's not what we're going to vote for.
So the recommendation here is that we agree that we are participating through the alliance with what Lower Platte South will sign. They are signing on behalf of the alliance an agreement with USGS. And as Megan mentioned, the timing is a little strange, where that is agreed in February, but then our next budget year when we pay doesn't start until July. And so it's a weird overlap of timing that we need to agree before the budget that when it comes around, we will have the money in the budget to pay for the testing.
If we don't approve it.
And that's the point here, is that by agreeing now, when Megan presents the alliance budget in June, that would not be something that would be line item removed, is essentially what we're saying now, is that other things in the alliance budget could be open to discussion, but it's essentially pre-agreeing that since Lower Platte South is acting on behalf of all of the partners, at the time when she provides the budget to us in June and we go into the next fiscal year, we would not remove that line item, because that would leave Lower Platte South on the hook for an agreement that has been defunded after it's signed.
But speaking of that, you had like 300 some thousand, whatever it was, for the total amount. Where did those numbers come from? And this money is going to USGS. $4,000 yeah. From MUD and so on.
Yes.
They're going to cut a check directly to Lower Platte South. Sends it to USGS.
Right.
And,
okay. And so. You got 300 and whatever it is, those total per year, 408,000.
Mm-hmm.
All right, where'd you get that number?
USGS could answer some of that. They're here as well. I didn't introduce them earlier, but they can answer some of the questions about the use of the funds.
Would you let someone like to come up from USGS, introduce themselves, and answer that question?
Absolutely. Could you pull up that spreadsheet that I gave you earlier? Excel.
Okay, thank you.
We're being recorded, so please introduce yourselves and your positions.
Yes, I'm Matt Moser. I'm a physical scientist with the USGS in Lincoln.
And Rick Wilson, I'm the deputy director.
Thank you.
Go right ahead. If you've got, okay. Do you want to answer what you've heard, or do you want specific question and answer?
Well, if it's okay, I just brought a few pieces of materials, some slides, and it explains how USGS operates in our funding mechanism. There's only three spreadsheets, so if the board would be, if that would help, I'd like to show that. And if you would pull up the third sheet, please. You can get that. We're a unique federal agency. We don't get complete straight line federal appropriation for the work we do. The way our organization, USGS, operates in Nebraska, there's 45 of us. We have three components to our funding mechanism. If you look on the left-hand side of this chart, you see appropriated. And that's about $1.8 million. So what that represents is Congress has authorized a straight line appropriation to USGS, and a typical program that would represent is our National Water Quality Assessment Program, some stream gauging that the Papio and some of your sites, but our total operating budget is about $5.4 million. So the straight-line federal appropriation, it's $1.8. The next column is called Other Federal Agencies. That's a little under $1,700,000 this year. That goes up and down. We work closely with EPA, Corps of Engineers, many other federal agencies. So that's another federal component to our budget. When you look at the one called Cooperative Matching Funds, that's the program that we're here today talking to you about. And what that represents is Congress has authorized and directed USGS to go out and work with state and local agencies, government agencies. We don't have agreements with nonprofits or private consultants. It's with state local agencies. So this is a little complicated, but the blue represents the federal money, and we call that the match, the Cooperative Water Program Matching Funds. The red above that then represents what you, the Papio, and many of your other counterparts in many cities and other agencies in the state of Nebraska contribute to projects. So today, when Director Thompson, you asked about the $400,000, correct, that will go to USGS. That's how that works under the Cooperative Water Program. When you assemble it all together on the right-hand side, it's still a little bit under $5 million because our budget fluctuates through the year. We anticipate about $5.4 million. So you can see the way we operate as an agency. So I wanted to make that really clear because I think there's been at times that folks say, well, you know, you're a federal agency. Why should the NRD have to pay anything? We have federal funds. And I just wanted to make sure that I could say that to you folks, that it's partially funded. So,
thank you.
Director, thank you for letting me have that. I can explain the way we estimate costs, if that would help. We're here just to help clarify. Would
please
you like
do.
Me to do that,
please,
Jim?
Please justify the amount of money that we're being asked to spend on this.
How much?
Yeah, the magnitude of the dollars.
I believe it was $408,000. If all those,
no, how do you get to that?
Okay,
that level.
And please go to tab number one.
In that context,
yes, sir.
If you were to award a contract for $408,000, you would require cost and pricing data.
Absolutely,
that's a federal acquisition regulation.
Absolutely.
As a former contracting officer for the U.S. government, I get a proposal, and there's determination how I determine that's fair.
Absolutely.
Okay, I've not seen any of that for
okay.
this, so maybe this is going to do it, but if it's not, there's further discussion necessary.
Okay. So this is a document, a spreadsheet that we use to estimate costs. And just for the board's reference, just so you know what Rick Wilson has done, I've had 30 2 years of federal service. I worked 16 years for the Corps of Engineers and now with the GS for 15 years and then, excuse me, got to add my numbers right, 17 and 17 and then also a couple years as a consultant. So I've estimated a lot of different professional services contracts. I've done the estimating myself and I've reviewed them. And so this particular model is how USGS estimates our costs. When you take the top column, row, and Matt, don't let me burn you. Okay, so we break it out by year. Then we take our salaries, and I'll have Director Thompson, I'll have more detail on the actual salaries, how we estimate those costs, but then salaries is the next line item. There's no overtime in this particular project, so that's zero. There was no airplanes or tickets or training costs, so there's no travel costs there. However, when Matt, who is our project chief, our lead scientist on this project, when he and his crews come and service the monitors, install the monitors, of course, we deploy from Lincoln, and this represents vehicle costs. Next, we have no training costs in this proposal. Equipment, not straight line equipment, but we do have supplies. Also, this other cost center, actually there's equipment costs in here. We have a center in Louisiana called the Hydrologic Instrumentation Facility, the HIF. It does a lot of quality assurance and does large procurements of equipment, and then that give us to, that's sent to us at the Water Science Centers. But of course there is a charge. So that represents that primary, the equipment cost, because these sensors, Matt, what's the typical cost of the unit deployed at Louisville?
So our tradition, or the nitrate's a little bit more expensive than our other parameters that cost to collect. So a typical water temperature, specific conductance, dissolved oxygen, and turbidity probe will run around $15,000. The nitrate sensor itself costs about $22,000 to operate. So that's just the upfront cost.
So I just want to make sure that it's expensive scientific equipment. I just want to thank you, Matt, for clarifying that.
One other thing.
That's the other cost center you're talking about?
Yes.
You got equipment, supplies, other cost center.
Yes.
Which one is it? Other cost center?
Right here, another cost center.
Okay,
that's
what
the HIF. Jim, director, that goes to the HIF.
And also I want to provide some clarity. You asked where the $408,000 is coming from. This specific sheet right here is representing $260,000, which would be the cost to operate the agreement that's the way we have done it the past 8 years.
So yeah, part of the problem tonight was that we used the base agreement. I wanted to make sure that I could explain this and show you how we estimate costs. We can give you the total spreadsheet, but tonight I wasn't sure how it was. This is the base agreement that I can provide all the rest. It's the same process. Laboratory costs are small, but there are some lab costs, additional analysis that are done. There's some shipping costs. We take all these net costs and we'll assemble them down here. This is total. This is our net cost. We have a small contingency factor that we add in. The leave factor is for the federal employees, our leave assessment, sick leave and vacation leave is represented in this row. So your total project expenses are right here by year. Now, these are still, there's still some additional overheads that need to be added on, and if you could go down for me, please. Our center has a center overhead for our rent. Other facility costs, some of our fixed costs are represented here by the cost center. Also, excuse me, not our rent. Our rent is here under our facility costs, along with other charges. Bureau is headquarters in Reston, Virginia, and they take an assessment off of the work, and that's that. You add these indirect costs, these overhead costs, on with these the other costs noted up here. And we'll, it totals down here. This is the estimated project cost. And as Matt said, this is for the sensor at Louisville, Waterloo, and the one in Salt Creek. It didn't contain the new site at LaShera or the additional new nitrate monitor at
Waterloo.
Waterloo. We can provide the additional spreadsheet, but for purposes tonight, I wanted to show you the estimated cost here. Now, we take this total amount, and then we use the, these are the cooperative matching funds, the cost share amount, the federal dollars that we put into this project, that you do as a taxpayer of the United States. And as our tax dollars go in here, and then that takes the 260 minus 64,000, and this is the cost that would be asked that the local sponsors pay. Of course, you, the NRD. So Director Thompson, I hope this makes sense. I'd like to show you one more slide if that's okay. It's on sheet two.
Please do.
Now, I didn't bring the actual spreadsheet. It's massive, and so these are some screenshots from that spreadsheet. What this represents, as I said, for the three-year, well, actually, this is a small period, but at these three sites, it's the same sheet that you saw previously, for the first effort called data collection. Is a GS-11, which in our organization is a fairly senior hydrologist, physical scientist, Matt. His daily rate, and again, to be clear, this is a net. This is not gross. So in the way we see things is that you take this daily rate and essentially you double it when you add in the overheads and those other factors that we had. And I think probably common sense, you would think to yourself, well, why in the heck don't you just show that burdened rate? You know, why, instead of showing us the net, why don't you show us the gross? And here's the dilemma we have as an agency. There's different assessments for the appropriated projects that are straight-line federal appropriation. The other federal agencies, there's a different assessment rate there, overhead rate. And then for the PAPIO or for the state and local sponsors. So unfortunately, we don't typically show these costs completely burdened on a, say, on a daily rate. We roll it up in that previous spreadsheet. And we're not trying to be vague, but that's how our financial system works. Data collection. This is a GS-11. That's a new hydrologist in our organization that she's has a master's degree in civil engineering, data interpretation. So we do, you can see that this is in not hours, this is in days. So this is the number of days between Matt and our new hydrologist that will do a tremendous amount of field work to maintain these monitors, install the monitors, operate them. Next, we go into data interpretation. So it's not just enough to have that information. We have to review it, process it, work the data because there's problems and spikes. It's just part of that data collection process. And then make interpretations about the science and the data that was collected. There's not a very large report process here, but there is some documentation, primarily of the information that goes on the web. We've seen the previous slides. And then publication, so it's still a lot of time, I understand that, but and then there's a limited amount for project management and administration, and this last one is also called project management and administration. This is a senior scientist, hydrologist in our organization, our water quality specialist, and he is ultimately responsible for review and the quality of data that Matt collects and interprets. So I hope this helps. I mean, this is a very rigid process we go through. And
the format you presented sure helps, but it said 196 and we're asking for 403.
Go back to sheet one, Bill. So again, this is for if the previous agreement, three-year agreement on three sites were carried forward, the total would be the 260 number.
The new agreement that's proposed is these three sites plus nitrate monitoring at Waterloo plus Lashara, I'm sorry, Waterloo plus Lashara with nitrate monitoring. So it would be, rather than 2.5 sites, maybe 3 and 4 full sites.
And that's another 140,000.
Approximately, yes. So quite an increase in capacity for data collection through the network.
And that 408 includes, you know, that also includes the federal matching funds. So it's not that you, the local sponsors, have to divvy up and pay for all of that yourselves.
That's the 312 number, roughly, and then minus MUD, Lincoln Water Systems, and then the three districts with the projects there.
And I'd recommend that staff gets this data in the future for any potential contract you expect us to sign. And furthermore, if you're not getting enough money from the feds, you ought to increase your appropriation. Because if, according to that chart, the red chart, if you didn't have any agreements, you would still be USGS doing whatever you do, right? So if you had no agreements doing otherwise, you'd still be a functioning federal agency.
Right? We'd be riffing people, but yeah, we still would be functioning.
Well, you're saying if it weren't for people like us, you wouldn't have as many people on staff.
Well, Jim, I mean, the size of our organization is dependent on the cooperative water program. And so, of course, there's no BS here. I mean, obviously our staff is dependent on the monies that we cost share with you folks. There's no doubt about that.
Any other questions or comments on this subject?
Yes.
Director Leahy. Director Leahy.
You can go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
My comment is, our staff said that the people that are benefiting is from MUD and Lincoln Water System. How come they're not an equal partner in this deal? And the next thing is, surface water is a Department of Natural Resources responsibility, and how come they're not participating in this?
Megan, do you want to answer? Gentlemen don't have to answer.
First question.
Thanks for being here.
You bet.
Don't leave yet.
Department of Natural Resources is a member of the Alliance, and so they help pay the basic administration fee. They have not traditionally paid into this agreement. The decision was made in 2007 by the Alliance to enter into this agreement to better understand what's going on in the Platte River. It's part of the goals and missions of the Alliance, and that's obviously related to surface water. I can't speak to any more of the original discussion on how that all came to pass, but that is the general, you know, mission and desire, is that we're better understanding, we're better helping collect data, we're providing a resource to the users of the river that represent all of those various interests that make up the Alliance. The equal partner question. Yeah. MUD, essentially this year, has looked at it as they are retiring a bubbler stream flow gauge at Venice that they say is a very little use to them, that costs on average $4,000 a year to that cost to them. And so they would move that cost over to this initial work at Lashara. And Lincoln Water System, as often as done, they said, well, we'll come in with what MUD's doing.
Well,
that's not a set. Neither one of those have been formally agreed on or set at this point in time. So we're presenting what I believe to be, but that could fluctuate.
You know, to me, the three major users of the information are hardly participating. That's just my personal opinion.
Both of the water systems are participating in the gauge that is above the well fields. But there are three other locations that essentially don't really have impact or benefit to the well fields on the Platte. So the gauge that would be above the well fields is where they would participate. Data downstream doesn't really impact them, but it does still impact recreational users and the general water quality goals of the Alliance, meaning the three districts and other state agency partners.
And surface water quality is Department of Environmental Quality, which is also a member. And we have leveraged these funds to fund our watershed management plan, fund other water quality work with their assistance.
Patrick, did you?
Next. Yes. Thank you. I just wanted to second some of what Director Tizar said about some of the book throwing, maybe, but I get the point about the communication of this and putting out information can't be a passive exercise, and it seems all too often that a lot of this is. And so I would encourage, whether it's the alliance or some kind of mechanism that makes this communication active, to get people to understand what this means to them and their safety and their health. A couple other issues I have. I understand the need to study the water quality issues and to monitor it. But it seems like a lot of the work that the Alliance is doing is always the studying and monitoring and testing and lab work, which I understand we need to know. But when are we going to start taking action on improving the water quality? Because every time we monitor and we study, it comes back, it's bad. Water quality is bad. So how many more times do we have to hear it's bad before maybe we start doing some things? And it seems like maybe the other NRDs that are part of the Alliance have a greater ability to do the things upstream on the nitrates end to make the water quality issue good. So while I'm going to support this, I do have concerns also, a second what Director Thompson said, where is the dollar figure? Even the answer that we got doesn't eliminate why there shouldn't be a dollar figure in there, not to exceed of what was put up here. Because the memo we got, my concern is because the memo we got on Friday had a dollar figure of about $293,000 to us. Mm-hmm. And now we're finding out it's only $134,000. And so that's a drop of $160,000, and so that's concerning, with, and no one has addressed that. So when I see this with no dollar figure, that also becomes concerning. It sounds like Eric has something to say to that. I'll let you jump in and continue on.
Marlon and I worked to rewrite the recommendation at the bottom. The previous version that was posted on Friday was to approve the agreement that Lower Platte South would sign, and so that was the total dollar amount that at the time represented the three-year agreement for all sites. And so the last slide of the six that Megan provided has a much better breakdown of the different components and then the responsibility for just specifically our district. There we go. The responsibility, there you go. Total for 3 years in partners, $312,299. And then subtract the MUD and Lincoln Water Systems components, which were in discussion, which would be right around that 290 level, which was what was listed as, this is what we expect to be the three-year total for all four sites with nitrate monitoring. That is the agreement that Lower Platte South would sign with USGS.
Right. Why can't we put this figure into the agreement? Why was that left off? Can we do that on Thursday?
You could, if you specified and said,
yeah, and I may just do it tonight.
We can do it right now.
Yeah. I think there's a little question, you know, what is MUD exactly going to put in? What is Lincoln Water exactly going to put in? If that changes that
number. I understand that, and I probably will just make an amendment to the motion out there to put that number in, and if something things change, we can come back like we always do if it's greater than the 110% of contract change. I just think we need that in there, especially how the numbers changed from Friday to today, and I do appreciate this breakdown. This is great.
Specify it's a three-year number, not an annual.
Yep, thank you. I
would suggest that you plan an amendment with the staff and come in rather than try to shoot from the hip right now and come up with a number.
Well, I think,
come in Thursday night with an amendment.
I think
Mom
and I, we just planned it. It was pretty good.
Okay. The numbers. They're shown here. We're still changing earlier today as we watch this.
I'll wait till Thursday to let other things, you know, let the ink dry, but
right.
Just know that I'm going to come with that on Thursday.
We'll come with
that. Okay.
We'll come with the record.
But again, I would just reiterate the active communication of this out there that needs to be. Otherwise, I agree at some point with Director Tuzar, if it's not getting the mission accomplished, then it just needs to stop. And the same thing with, if we don't use the information to warn the public and then maybe drum up some public support to change some things to make it better. And while I love the monitoring, because it does tell you what you need to know before you go out there and make a fool of yourself, at some point, if it's not accomplishing the mission, it's just got to stop. We have other uses for this fund. So,
done. You're done. Okay. Anybody else? Director Teaser. Director Teaser and then Marlon.
If I could, a question for USGS. First of all, I want you to understand there's probably nobody on this board that supports the USGS gauges more than I do, because I use them at least 2-3 times a day. I'm checking many because I'm very active in that area. And I really appreciate that. However, you know, I do have concerns. Now, you're talking about the actual probe. It costs how much?
$15,000 to $20,000.
Okay, now where is the actual probe located?
So the best way that we deploy these we find that if we hang them off the bridges near bridge piers, we can actually collect the best quality data. If you were to put this probe in a hard structure on the bank, there's more risk to the instruments where we can collect silt. There's debris can come down, get stuck on those instruments. Whereas if we hang it off of a bridge rail, put it by a pier, any debris that does come down kind of hits it, bounces off, floats down the stream. So earlier you also mentioned it's only out March through October because of the equipment cost. We are hesitant to put it out during winter conditions to risk equipment.
See, but the I'm susceptible to getting flooded. So I like to know if I'm walking in atrazine or in February or March. Just a personal little thing with me. I guess I had some concerns. I'm very familiar with the Lashera gauge. You know, you got a fence stake out there holding your pipe in, and if the kids go cut, you know, cut the hose, and it gets knocked over. I have concerns when you start talking about a very expensive piece of instrument that's on the backside of a pier that could be gotten to by vandals.
Right. And we definitely try to take as much care towards equipment compared to hard structure bank equipment. Only once in the last 8 years throughout those 3 sites I ever remember one of those sites ever tampered with. And at the time it was during the 2012 drought, the water levels were low. They actually accessed it from the bottom side of the pond, so they were waiting up. They somehow pulled everything apart. They didn't do any damage, but they were looking at what was there.
Yeah, my concern is we got a wreck site right there, and we got kids out there constantly, at the piers, messing around.
Yeah.
Hell, I did it when I was a kid.
And that's one of the other reasons to put it by the bridge here. Yeah. Airboaters that are out there, any other boating, trying to keep it out of the flow. So it's hidden behind the pier, but the flow of the river is naturally kind of impacting anything coming down the river. We also attach flame tanks that hold it on the bridge, so it's a visual.
And lastly, how does that water temperature gauge benefit me as a consumer? And I can see it of being interest to game and parks because, when the water gets 92 degrees, they got catfish going belly up. But how does that, we're paying a lot of money for that. And I don't think you and I can change the water temperature. But I'm just curious as to what the real benefit is to have that information.
Well, like you mentioned, one of the biggest benefits is high river temperatures affect fish. So,
okay, but I'm kind of funny. That's a game of parks thing. Let them pay for it. Why am I paying for it? Because I go out there with I go out there with the thermometer. I literally put it on a fishing pole and I check the temperature. And because that affects my fishing. And, but it just kind of bothers me that we have, we have this instrumentation, and I question the real benefit. Again, Game and Parks, I can see the water temperature, but we're not going to change the water temperature, so why are we paying for it?
One temperature is required because necessary for all 3 of the other parameters built in kind of way that the other parameters calculate themselves off the temperature. So temperature in one way will be less. Another way is there's an outfitter with Spear Creek, and I've talked with him a few different times. He mentioned that he looks at
complicated that as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments? We have a motion on the floor. Roll call, please.
Teaser.
No.
Thompson.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
And Chair.
Yes. I believe that that concludes our agenda. Unless it's been revised.
For the PPO now.
Okay, we are adjourned.
Yep. FPL's now. Director Teaser.
Do you want this, Rich? You want this?
Oh. No, thank you. I forgot about the FPL. Bring it home.
I haven't earned your money yet.
You want to take a 2 minute break, guys, or
no?
Let's go with this.
Yeah, where is it going?
Let's roll. Let's just roll, Rich.
Huh?
Nobody's leaving. Let's just roll. I only got one item.
Oh, you gotta go.
Okay, who do we got?
Most are solid.
Fred.
Yeah.
Oh, that's P.R. No, that's not the right one.
Oh, it's not. Sure.
Oh, here it is. I got it.
Yeah, I can watch that.
Okay, we'll call a meeting of the FEL subcommittee together into order at 8:24. As stated earlier, the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back and out there in the hallway with that form call.
John Conley.
He'll be here in a
Frost.
Yeah.
Woodle.
Yes.
Thompson.
Here.
Chairperson.
Here. Adoption agenda?
So move.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Cross.
Yeah.
Poodle.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes.
I was here for roll call.
I have proof of publication before me. Item number 6, review of recommendation of right-of-way acquisition, Western Pacific Regional Basin number 7. Do we need to go to exec?
I don't think so right now.
All right. Good evening. Go ahead.
All right. I think we lost our crowd. All right. We can go to the map. Maybe that'd be a good place to start. But just the quick background. In April of last year, 2015, we started design on WP6 and WP7 reservoirs and with FIRA Engineering as our consultant. And in November and December of 2015, we held the public hearings in preparation for land acquisition for most of the land for those two structures this fiscal year. So this is the first piece of property in the land acquisition process, and this is on WP7. So that's the smaller and the furthest east of the reservoirs. This particular tract is a little bit different from how we normally do things in that the property... So it's highlighted in red what we need for the project, but from that road, which is 108th Street, over to the other, it looks like a driveway kind of. I don't have a pointer, but at any rate, I can walk up and show you. So
there was an option on the property for this whole piece, which is tracks 4 and 5. And so we knew that. And this option is going to be closed, I think it was February 28th was the date, right at the end of February. And so the developer that has the option has made us an offer rather than us making the landowner an offer. And so the development company or the BHI properties would close on the entire parcel and then concurrently run a purchase agreement with us that we would purchase. What we need is the shaded red area. That's 41 acres. So they have made us an offer of $42,000 per acre
we need approximately 41 acres. This is the second weird thing, is that we do not have our legal survey done quite yet, so we don't have the exact acreage, although that would be done February 12th. So the purchase price will be about $1,722,000 for that about 41 acres, but the agreement is for $42,000 per acre as based on the surveyed acreage. The last thing that's a little strange about this is because it's a little earlier in our process, we wanted the opportunity to, if we had to buy more land a little bit because of some permitting issue or something as we move down the road, then we would have the option to buy that at the same price that they've offered us right now. So that clause is in the purchase agreement and allows us to buy additional land that we need that's necessary due to permitting at the price of $42,000 per acre. And that would last through December of 2016 or until they submit their final plat. So basically that gives us some time to get through final design, which we're in the middle of right now, get through final design, get those permits in with the state and with the Corps of Engineers and see if we have any feedback that looks like we would need to buy any additional land. It doesn't really preclude us from buying land if we have to. It's just that it sets that price for us if it's a necessary, if it's necessary due to permits. So anyway, those are the main points. And so we would ask that you consider the acquisition of the 41 acres for $42,000 per acre.
I move staff recommendation.
Second.
Discussion for any comments from the public? Staff? Director Zapp.
What is Jerry selling the land to Art for? How much?
I'm not sure. I'm going to look at Dave because I'm not sure if that's, if we are able to disclose that information. I mean, it's the purchase agreement between BHI and the current landowner.
Yeah. If we're aware of that information, that there's no reason we can't disclose that information. Caution the board going into other considerations of the values of the lands we are in.
Well, once it the land, it will be public information once
right.
the contract's
right.
signed.
Well, I could.
I'll go to Sarpy County Registered Deeds and get the information then.
Dave will just have to jump in and stop me because we do know we've seen that option agreement. I have seen the option agreement,
okay.
and it is the same price that they've asked that we pay
Thank
for
you.
Our property. Yeah.
What? It looks like we're closing a road off here down at the southwest corner of this property.
Mm-hmm.
Is the intention to create a dead-end road there coming down from the north?
No, so that on 108th Street has been intended to go away from the City Pavilion through their planning project. So Lincoln Road will be a connection that will happen between the development surrounding there. So that would be the connection, and then Cornhusker would be a connection at the top.
We're not being asked to provide any road right, buy road right away, are we?
We, no, but we are... We think that Cornhusker Road will go on the back berm of the dam, so we could provide that right-of-way, and then the county and the city could build the road in that location.
Cornhusker. On
Cornhusker.
The other end down here, if they extend.
Oh, right. No, on Lincoln Road, we're not providing any right-of-way.
Thank you.
That's right here.
Yeah. So which one's track four and five again? I guess I see the numbers,
okay.
but I don't see the line board up there.
This is track four. This is
track
five. And then this is track five.
So, but we're going to get the whole thing? Is that what we're saying?
This is on I.
Okay.
So this is one transaction.
So the rest of track five, that'll be surplus property then after we're done?
It was just
five.
Oh.
To get you in
fancy houses.
That was always fun. And then what was the appraised value that the appraisal was done?
Yeah.
Could we safely say it was higher?
I would recommend it.
Okay.
Allegedly, it was higher. Thank you.
Any other comments?
I didn't say the number.
Professor Frost?
I don't see why we're paying this kind of money for this piece of ground when dam site 15A, a lot of them people didn't get near this amount. And you got developers all around that too.
You know, it's really,
I think you're pleasing
comparables. You know, it's based on comparable sales in the area. And so, and that's how those prices are set. And the prices along, even from when we did Prairie Queen, they've been just very high in that area. The land sales have been very high.
Then are we going to put a $42,000 minimum bid on the land we have for sale around our dam then?
Underwater, that's not privilege information, is
it? Yeah, go there.
This ain't privileged information. This is public information. I'm asking, you know, are we going to put in minimum price?
Point of order, Mr. Jaff.
Yeah. Mr. Jaff, you are ruled out of order. Any further questions? Roll call. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Ross.
No.
John Conley.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our agenda.
Apparently, this is
a little bit, because they get more credit. But they think this is expensive. Wait till we get the offers from the next piece. See, on the other side.
If you got the information, they don't put it out.
Hey, Amanda, the other person is just going to say black. I'll go backwards.